the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive. And a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch a cat fish from dusk till dawn. We make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Cause you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause the country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Thank you. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
So you're listening to the Mad Science Show. Say, folks out there listening in on this radio show, don't be surprised if one day you don't see old Crazy Hair Shazizz riding past your house on a lightning bolt. See, people out there turning and twisting terminology when it comes to free energy, and they just don't get it. They have no understanding of what's actually occurring with electricity, high voltage and such. So, once you get an understanding of that, then you'll understand that this Earth is free energy. Everything around is energy. You know, there are people out there who can literally look like they're defying the known laws of physics and do crazy stuff, like, you know, doing all kinds of flips in midair and all kinds of stuff, man. Look at some of the gymnastics out there. If you really want to see what people are capable of, go up and Google up breakdancing. Look for this guy named Lilu on breakdancing. Just watch these guys. Watch these guys and gals out there do things that you wouldn't think were even remotely possible, because seemingly they're defying the laws of gravity and physics. I mean, people that can stand on one hand and spin around like a top and do all these really wild flips in the air and all kinds of stuff. It's amazing. But see, it's not impossible what they're doing, obviously, because they are doing it. They have an understanding of physics, and they know how to make those physics work for their advantage. They know how to get these things to get the most power out of every bit of effort that they put forward to it. And so when I talk about free energy, there's a taboo out there, I guess, when it comes to free energy, you know, alternative energy, over unity, zero point energy, so on and so forth. But people just don't get it. They just don't get it. It's not about how much energy we've got. It's about how we use it. Just like those folks seemingly appearing to defy the laws of gravity and physics and being able to do these flips and spin around on one hand with their body upside down in the air and do all kinds of stuff. Seriously, if you haven't seen it, go out there and look at those breakdance videos. You'd be surprised at what some of these folks are able to do. And gymnastics out there, and just go out there and Google up breakdancing for one, and then when you get through looking at some, watching all these breakdancers, then Google up People Are Amazing and see what people are actually capable of. See, now when you look and watch these folks do these things, and it seems that they're defying the laws of physics, they're not. They have learned how to use the forces of nature to literally do the amazing. And that's exactly what free energy is all about. Everything around you is energy, pure energy. The earth is so powerful. Everything from thermoelectrics, static electrics, you name it, hydroelectrics, wind power, solar power. There's energy coming in from every single direction, and there is more energy potential in your average battery than you can possibly imagine. Amazing amounts of energy. And by doing pretty much what those folks did with the physics, so that they could do their gymnastics the way they did and their breakdancing the way they did, and at least appear to be defying the laws of gravity, how could somebody be that incredibly strong? I mean, standing on one hand with your feet out to the side, horizontally or vertically, and being able to spin around and do all these amazing things. Well, it wasn't that they were supermen or superwomen. It's just that they had a profound understanding of physics. They knew how to use the forces of gravity and centrifugal force and all that to be able to do something that was just incredible. Now, there ain't no difference whenever you're talking about utilizing energy. When Tesla was back in his day and he was flipping that nice switch on and off, and he kept finding that every time he did this, a surge of energy would rush in. And then when the circuit finally balanced itself back out, that it would level itself off. And so by paying attention to that and understanding what was going on there, he started realizing that he could utilize that switching to be able to ramp up the voltage. And voltage is pressure. He also knew that by the speed of which he was doing that he would be able to define the frequency range at which this energy would travel from that point on. And so Stephen Gibbons has posted a lot of links inside the chat room, one of which is a Wikipedia article about transistors. Transistors are amazing for raising the frequency up to really high ranges, to where now you can actually get radio and telecommunications kind of stuff. But they also are capable of switching speeds that are really fast, and you can actually speed them up and slow them down using things like a potentiometer or a motor controller, like you see in some of my solve videos. And the key to being able to utilize that energy is to have whatever it is that you're wanting to use designed to run off of that specific frequency. It's obvious that if the magnetic field is expanding and collapsing too fast, it's not going to run your average motor. But what it will do is it will send a high voltage pressurized signal to wherever you want to go, and you'll be able to have radio or TV or, cell phone technology. These are all things that Tesla pointed out to everybody. You can literally control that energy. If you know what to do with that energy, you can control it. And if you're needing more current to run the inefficient junk, well, then you're obviously going to want that field to be as strong as possible and to collapse slower than it would be normally if you was going to try to, let's say, run a radio signal and such. So what I found with transistors are really good for ramping up the voltage and basically making a high frequency, high pressurized wave that will be able to, charge up things and travel through things. The problem that you find when you talk about transistors is current flow. And that's why you'll have to have resistors somewhere inside the circuit to ensure that the current flow doesn't get too high. If you could keep a transistor cool enough, you could run it indefinitely and it wouldn't fail. But transistors are subject to heat, and when they get too hot and the materials inside of them basically melt into one deal, because it's just like a short circuit. It's basically like you're just directly connected now. In the Bedini circuit, which I'm going to talk about here in a little while, they utilize transistors to pulse coils. And when one of those transistors fails, then that causes the other ones to have to work harder, which causes them to get hot. So it's a domino effect. The first one in line to fail, and then the next one to fail, and then the next one to fail in really short order, because it doesn't have enough magnetic force to force that rotor past the extra coils that is involved in the system. So transistors do have an amazing ability to ramp up the frequency, ramp up the voltage, but they're not really good for current at this point in time. Now, I'm sure that if you took the time, you could actually design one that would withstand a lot of current. There are MOSFETs out there and transistors that are heavier duty for to be able to hold more amperage and stuff like that. But the whole key to utilizing this power is to try to do it with the least amount of input to make it the most possibly efficient circuitry you've got. Now, the rotary switch that I posted the link inside the chat room, that is my latest video down there. I've put a video out called Rotary Switch. This is a way that you can actually get a lot of power, a really strong magnetic field out of pulsing your average battery. And the whole key to this concept is that you need to be able to break that circuit, to completely break that circuit. With a transistor, it never really completely breaks the circuit. It basically slows down, but it's still actually connected. And so you need to take, like on a commutator that is inside of a motor, you need to be able to make and break that circuit. and time it out to wherever you want it for whatever pulse range that you want to use. Like if you're running 60 hertz, you can do all the math and figure out how often, how many RPMs your motor's going to be spinning at, and how much time between connections that you need to have so that that thing will run efficiently. And so what this rotary switch does is it completely makes and breaks the circuit. And if you'll note, if you watch the video, inside the video, the electric motor that is actually running the make and break switch, which is made out of some brass brushes, it is running series with the whole system. The whole entire system, including the batteries, is everything running in series, so that when this thing makes its contact, it will not only shut the motor off, but it'll shut the battery off for a second, and then the speed of that motor coming around will cause it to kick the motor back on and kick power to the coils, and then you get a really strong magnetic pulse, and then it kicks off again, and you catch that back EMF, because when that field in the primary coil of those microwave oven transformers, you pulse it really strong, it saturates the core of that microwave oven transformer, which transfers that magnetic force up through the primary, which is the high voltage side that has all the really fine winded wires inside there, and then you get a high voltage arc coming across the, which in the video you'll see where I'm actually just shooting the spark right straight back to the transformer core itself. If you look really close at those transformers, you'll notice that one side of that high voltage winding is actually bolted to the transformer core, and the opposite side is your high voltage output. And so with that said, once you have an understanding of how those things function, then it makes it easier for you to understand how to extract that energy. And if you can do this with a microwave oven transformer, you can do this with any coil. What I'm saying is, if you make a properly designed precision rotary switch that will literally make and break that circuit, that's the key. If you want to understand what it is I'm trying to do and you don't mind getting shocked, take a 9-volt battery and any little transformer, put both fingers on the wires and push one on the positive side and then tap one on the negative side and then keep your fingers on there and release it, and that is the flyback punch that you'll get. You'll notice you'll get shocked really good. Because when that field expands, nature wants to put it back into place rapidly. And that power that you just pushed up there is pressurized power. That once you let go of that, you break that switch, that energy is going to fly back. And if you look inside the video, you'll see you got some pretty powerful sparks coming off of that rotary spark, rotary switch. There's a lot of power involved there. And properly designed, you could even capture the power coming back off the switch itself. And so if you took the commutator idea and you took this rotary switch idea, you could literally build a motor generator, electric motor, that is actually a generator. And if you understand the way that which direction the current is flowing on the way out, as opposed to what way the current is flowing on the way in, you can use things like diodes to literally guide the energy in the same exact direction as the direction that you're spinning it, so that the flyback is going to continue to go in the same direction as the energy coming in, and you won't get that effect that you get whenever the cogging effect, that lens effect. And so you'll actually be working with the generator as opposed to it. See, right now whenever you try to draw energy off of a generator head, when you open the line for the circuit, the energy is able to make a path right through the light bulb, which is your load, and then right back into the same doggone generator, making an opposing magnetic field that wants to fight with the field that you're trying to use. And so, using this right here, this rotary switch, you're able to get these coils to pack a punch. And then when that flyback comes back, you obviously don't want to send it back to the same direction, so you can guide it using things like diodes to whichever direction you want. It's just like plumbing, folks. It's no different than plumbing. If you put water into a system, you tell that water where to go with the plumbing. And if you only want so much pressure on this side over here, you put a resistor or a valve in there where you only turn this resistor or this valve up to whatever you want. By restricting the flow of that current, you can boost up the pressure on one side. And so, if you can have a basic understanding of how water flows, then you can have a basic understanding on how electricity flows. It's all energy is the same. Any of this energy can be utilized. It doesn't matter how fast it's going or how slow it's going. The key to the maximum amount of power output in these systems is going to be the timing in which that you allow that magnetic field to do what it is. You know, you expand it up to its full pressure. And so what are you going to do? You're going to release it rapidly, or you're going to release it slowly? That's the key. You want to be able to allow this thing to pressurize and then be able to grab as much of it on the way back through as possible so that you get the full use of that magnetic field. With transistors, it's going too fast. With MOSFETs, it's going too fast. With a rotary switch and a motor controller, you can literally speed this up or slow it down to whatever frequency range that you need it to be at. But the key is, you gotta have time for that magnetic field to collapse completely to get all of that energy out of it. Otherwise, if you speed it up too fast, the field is expanding and it doesn't have time to collapse. And so, whereas you can ramp up the voltage portion, the higher voltage pressure of it, you lose out on the current flow, if you understand what it is that I'm trying to say. Back to the Bedini motor, Bedini circuit. Plus I also posted a picture link to the rotary switch kind of diagram that shows you how it was actually connected in the video, because wasn't sure if I actually explained it properly enough or clear enough. But nonetheless, if you have any issues with it, if you're watching the video and you need to figure out exactly where I hooked something up, then you can always contact me on Skype. But I want to go to this Bedini circuit here for a second. There's a guy out there on YouTube, Deaf Man. Looks like, I don't even know if I'm spelling this right. It's D-A-F-T-M-A-N. Deaf Man. Anyway, what I love about this guy's videos, and I think I liked a bunch of them on my YouTube, so if you can find my YouTube channel or my like videos, there's three videos that he did showing how to build this Bedini circuit to pulse coils. And essentially he uses a TIP 3055 transistor, base collector and emitter, and it shows you he basically put a diagram together that you can glue to, you can print out, you can glue to a piece of wood and take some brass nails and tack them in where all the points where they'd be soldered at. And then all you gotta do is take those parts and follow exactly the lines where the wires are connected to your coils and so on and so forth. And he made this thing so user-friendly, it's mind-blowing. And he has a website, which I believe we posted in the chat room. If Steven's actually posted it in the resource portion, and it should be posted in the chat room. If not, I'll find it later and repost the link. But what I love about this right here is you really don't have to be an electrician or electronics engineer in order to be able to build this circuit, to replicate it, to test it, to do what you want to see what can be done with it. All you have to do is set the parts right down on it, know how to solder some wires to it, put them right exactly the way that you see them on the paper, and there you have one of Bedini's circuits that uses the pulse coils. Now, essentially, what happens is he's got a coil that, what they call bifilar wound, and it has essentially two windings on the same coil. There's primary and the secondary, but they're wound side by side. So if you took two different gauges of wire and you twisted the ends together and started winding this coil, you keep winding, and then at the end of it, you literally have like four wires coming off of this one cord that you just put together, and this will show you how to hook it up. That's that easy. And now those coils then in turn pulse magnets, which are all north-facing magnets. You find the side of the magnet that's north, and you stick it to your flywheel, and then all of them's north. And so whenever these magnets come past that, it has a trigger coil in there that basically sends a little juice to the transistor that in turn turns your battery source on and pulses that coil, which pushes that magnet away. Really simple, ridiculously simple. And on the opposite side, you got another coil, which is your pickup coil that you use to recharge your battery. And this system actually on this side of the deal will actually take some of that flyback and put it back into the battery. And the diodes that you see inside there, those are essentially to guide the energy where you want it to go. Like if you look at the diode, and on one side of it's got a stripe, imagine that stripe as an arrow, and that will show you the direction of which way that flow for that diode is. So the power can go through the diode that way, but it can't come back through the opposite way. And so that's how you use those diodes to actually guide the water where you want it to go, or the electricity where you want it to go, just like a valve in your plumbing. Sending it whichever direction you want. And it's actually possible to split that off and send in two separate directions at the same exact time. So what I like about what he's doing and what I'm trying to do here, and hopefully my explanation is simple enough that you can understand what it is that I'm trying to say, is that if you simplify this where the average Joe knows how to do these are off the store shelf parts right here. There's a in this diagram as well, if you're looking at the picture right now, you can click on it. If you're looking at the picture, there is a 1K variable resistor. That's kind of like the volume knob on your radio that turns up the sound or whatever. And it also is like a valve with a knob on there where you can adjust how much water is actually going through the plumbing. In this particular case, it's a variable resistor that speeds up and slows down the current flow of the system, so that you can get it right there to that sweet spot to where this transistor is kicking when you want it to kick. You can adjust it just right, speed it up, slow it down, that kind of stuff there. So it's not that we don't have enough energy. It's that we need to understand how to use it. Like those acrobatic people that I talked about, the breakdancing people, they have an understanding of physics. And so they know how to use that power to their advantage. You know, even if you want to talk about for Newton's law, for every action is an equal and opposite reaction. They know on this side they're going to have this much pressure, and on that side they're going to have that much pressure. And if they use leverage points, and they can be able to balance in awkward ways that look like you couldn't do that. Sometimes you look at some of the way these people are doing these acrobats or breakdancing as if they're defying the laws of physics, the laws of gravity. They're not. And so everything that I've been telling you on this show today about electricity is we're not trying to defy any of the known laws of physics. All we're trying to do is utilize these forces that we already know about, these physics, to get work done in the most efficient manner. We waste more energy than we ever use. That's a fact. And if you understand how this energy is actually traveling, then you can understand you could actually be able to capture what would have normally been waste energy and guide it to wherever you want it to go, whether it be heat, voltage pressure, or even current flow. When you try to force too much energy through a system, it meets resistance because it can't get all that energy through there. And so that resistance produces friction, which in turn produces heat that causes things to get hot and begins to fail. So if you know the sweet spot in there, just the amount of energy that you need in order to get the reaction that you want, as far as like electric motor being able to pulse the other coils on the other side, and those same fields will repel each other, or in some pulling cases, if the opposite, they'll actually attract each other. And then you have the switch timing to where you can turn it on and off whenever you want it to. It's that easy. It's so ridiculously easy. If you, like I said, if you understand plumbing, valves, and things like that, sizes of pipes, then you understand electricity. And so this rotary switch, where in this video you can see it's pretty well not made, it's not made very well. If Stephen mentioned in there earlier that somebody might actually have a patent on that kind of the design like that, which if they do, and somebody out there locates a rotary switch that will do exactly what it is that I'm wanting to do here, I'm wanting to be able to... You can watch this. If you get a coil, and you got your positive and your negative, you got your negative on one side, and then you take the other wire and you tap it on the battery, and once you let that pull that back off of that battery, watch closely, and you will see an arc jump back from that coil to that battery. And it's no little bitty arc. And if for some reason you happen to be touching both of those terminals at the same time when you do that, you're going to get lit up. The people in the auto industry have figured out this pretty well, because if you look at the coil in your the coil and the distributor in your vehicle, that's pretty much the same process as a make and break circuit, like what I'm talking about. Now, the system inside your car is basically set up to send a high voltage arc across to the other side, and The old style distributors had a point system in there that ran off of a lobe off of a cam. So when the shaft of the distributor was turning around, it had an oblong shaped on one side that would open this switch. And when that switch was closed, it was connected to and put power to the coil. And when it was open, then suddenly that power from the coil was able to fly back in the other direction and then leap across the gap of the spark plug, igniting your fuel and sending you on down the road and repeating that process over and over. So what I may actually be looking for could literally be an old style distributor. Like in the old tractors or the older vehicles back in the 60s, or maybe even as far as the early 70s. I don't know when the last time they made point systems for cars, because now they went to an electronic ignition and the electronic ignition, they are still able to generate a spark, but it works off of a different kind of concept. And what I'm talking about with the rotary switch is being able to get the maximum amount of charge out of every time you pulse that battery. With the transistors or resistors, it never really completely breaks that circuit. Basically just slows it down. And so you actually need to separate those terminals to completely disconnect the battery away from the coil. And when you do that, then you get the maximum amount of flyback off of it. That's why this is so important, what I'm trying to tell you here. Now, if you're just looking for a high voltage, high frequency, then transistors, MOSFETs, and even 555 timers are speed controllers that will actually be able to do that, because it doesn't require you completely disconnecting from the battery. Now, if you're looking for a really powerful field and a really powerful punch on the flyback, then a rotary switch is going to be the key to making that possible. With high voltage, high frequency, and being able to speed up and slow down the input on there, that's why you'd have like potentiometers motor controllers or variable. Oh crud! Can't remember all of them. Anyway, basically like a volume knob. A variac for a motor controller or whatever that it basically is a variable resistor that slows down the amount of current flow, which basically slows down how fast that transistor, MOSFET, or even the 555 timer will come on, because it actually has to reach a certain voltage before it will make the material inside the transistor conductive enough to allow current to flow across to the other side, to essentially like the emitter on the other side. You got the base of the transistor, you got the collector of the transistor, and you got the emitter of the transistor. And transistors can be used to catch energy on the way back in order to trigger an on and off, turning this thing on and off. I know that sounds all super high tech, but it's not. It really isn't. What we're talking about is essentially the same thing. If you go over to your light switch on the wall and you just start turning it off and on at different speeds, if you start turning this thing on and on and on and off and on and off and on and off really fast, and you'll start noticing that you'll get voltage spikes at different frequencies, and you can literally blow your light bulb out of your socket up there, because they can only handle so much power, whether it be a tungsten element or whatever, but they can only handle so much power. With the exception of fluorescent bulbs, they can handle a lot of voltage. But essentially what you're doing is you're opening up the floodgate and allowing that to rush in. Let's see, Stephen posted in there, Tesla four-way switch as one set of coils are being powered. The rest are acting as pickups around the ferrite iron core. It's clear in the second image of this. Patton, I believe it is there. Bedini got his idea. I believe you're probably right. And essentially, when we're talking about transformers as well, there's something I need to mention. Ferrite is going to be one that, if you're going to build your really powerful transformer, ferrite's probably where you're going to want to go. Because the laminate iron cores that you normally see in your average transformer, those have a tendency to get hotter. The ferrite, well, because of the materials that's inside the ferrite, actually helps to keep that core cooler. Because when you got induction going on, the iron that's inside those coils, basically you're creating an induction style heater. And what do they call eddy currents and stuff like that, and it causes metals to get hotter. But the core itself, when you pulse that coil, that core acts as a way to kind of slow down that magnetic flux, to kind of hold it there for a second, so that you get the best punch out of that magnetic field when you pulse that coil. That's what the transformer coils are. There are air coil transformers that you don't need a core, but you're not going to get that heavy of a punch out of it, because the magnetic flux is actually, the field is actually going to collapse quicker than it would be if it had saturated that magnetic either iron ferrite core or iron laminated core, so that it can hold it there just briefly enough in order to be able to allow that field to give you a stronger punch. Hope that makes sense. But anyway, I'm going to put a star on that. He posted a deal in there of a patent that kind of shows what we're talking about there. And if you take a look at these patents, even if you think you don't understand it, once you learn just the basics of some of the little symbols that's on there, you can see which ones are coils, and the diodes will be ones that have little arrows and a stripe on the top of it, shows you the direction of flow inside there, and the switches. Once you get the basic understanding of a schematics and you just look at it like it was plumbing, then you understand what it is that we're talking about. I mean, but that's why I pointed out the DAF man guy. Because if you want to mess around with these circuits, and but you don't really know a whole lot about electronics, these would be the ones for you, because, I mean, he made them so ridiculously simple. And his YouTube channel, I don't know, I think I have to find a link to it. I got a video somewhere posted. But his YouTube channel, when you watch his how-to videos, he literally takes you step by step through there and explains it in such an easy way that the average Joe can figure it out. See, Tesla showed us a lot. He's responsible for a lot of stuff that we're using today. Actually, if I had to say, for a majority of electricity, electronics and stuff we're using today. But here in the modern day age, the whole key of free energy, what the heck will you want free energy for anyway? It's because when people are under the gun of the power companies, oil industries, any in energy industries out there whatsoever, it's only for those who can afford it. And so if you can't afford to pay your doggone light bill, then you ain't got no lights. Unless you understand how to take some junk and make some lights. And so, while I'm in the process of trying to build like the holy grail of free energy devices that is irrefutable, undisputable, meantime, I'm showing you ways that you can actually take and utilize what you've already got to produce energy that you could then in turn, you know, at the very least keep some lights on, some sort of comfort going on. But if the governments of the world and the power companies of the world really seriously cared about you instead of the bottom line, then all this information would already be utilized. Some of this information actually is utilized. They just don't tell you that, hey, there's extra capabilities to this particular electric motor. You can not only use it as a electric motor, you can use it as a generator as well. Now, imagine long time ago, I was talking about making a electric motor generator, where you took an electric motor and you basically combined it into a generator, like the old style generators, like they had in Volkswagens and tractors, and you put power to one, and then you can get a higher voltage AC out the other side and be able to run stuff with it. Well, there's a company out there called Redline that actually makes these things. 12 volts to 120 volts at 500 watts. Now keep in mind, They'll drain your battery down pretty good if you ain't got a large battery bank that can have a lot of amp hours to it. They'll drain your battery down pretty doggone quick. But nonetheless, when they put these in these telephone trucks and stuff to run these big lights and the light company trucks so that whenever they're out on a job somewhere and they're trying to work on high voltage wires, they want to be able to have some power. And so they got heavy duty alternators and batteries inside these trucks so that they're actually able to, with the truck alone, be able to run these big lighting systems that keep the place lit up while they're working. So these things are already out there. And I honestly believe, it's not about believe, I know that they can be designed so much better to, you know, be so so more efficient. Puzzled Bart said we got 18 inches of snow overnight. Holy smokes, man. We're having a snow shoveling party today. Oh, well, brother, I don't think I'm going to be able to make it over there. Me and Cole don't get along. Alright, and so anyway, watch this video called Rotary Switch and help me figure out a place to either buy one that's already made or to find somebody who can manufacture one that is really precision. And here's the key. I was running this. This is a 12-volt motor that I was running off the same battery that I'm actually pulsing the motor on, or the pulsing the coils with. But this switch doesn't even have to run on the same power source, and it doesn't even have to be a very big motor. You could take a little tiny 1.5-volt motor, and if you can make contacts that will go in between the positive side or the negative side terminal that will basically turn that power on and off, that's all you need, and get that massive surge out of there. So even the rotary switch could be designed to be more efficient so that you can get the maximum amount of pulse out of that without draining too much power off the battery. And like I said, if you watch inside that video, you note that that motor isn't running constantly. It's coming on and off every time that switch inside there, that the motor's running the switch, and it's also pulsing the coils. So every time the make and break circuit opens, then the motor stops, the pulsing of the coil stops, and then the flyback comes back the other direction. And every time the switch closes, then the motor spins, it charges the coil up, and so on, over and over again. And so you get a really strong magnetic pulse. I had a AA battery sitting on my table, and this table's not really quite, it's not really quite level, and so every time that coil would pulse, you could see that battery would roll up towards the transformer because it turned the transformer into an electromagnet, essentially. Every time you energize those coils, that transformer becomes an electromagnet. And so when the circuit was broke, then the battery would roll back down. So I literally had mechanical motion going on while I'm pulsing this doggone coil. And you could actually use the same deal. That's what Bedini was doing. He was pulsing one coil, spinning some magnets, and then on the opposite side had other coils that would pick up power off the other side. So essentially, he made a motor generator. But the difference between his and the red line generator that I talked about was the actual fact that he was pulling energy off of the collapse of the coil as well. So when he energized the drive coil, he could pull energy off of that drive coil through the trigger coil, or actually even through the drive coil itself, to help recharge, put energy back inside that battery. That's the simple understanding of it. And so what else we got here? Okay, so let's see. Alright, that rotary switch picture that I put in there, if you happen to have if you're in the chat room and you click on that picture, I can explain to you Otherwise, I'll try to do the best I can. If you follow from the negative side of the battery, the black wire that goes around, it connects to one side of the battery. And then the other side of the microwave oven transformer, MOT 1, is what it's called in there. You follow that black wire path. I should have put arrows on this. It goes around to the opposite side of the other coil. So far the energy from the negative side is going through, and it's all running series. Then if you follow on MOT 2 from the opposite side, that positive red wire goes over to one side of the switch. And then if you note that one side of the electric motor, the 12 volt motor, is connected to the opposite side of the switch. This is where the connection happens right here. And then follow the red wire again up to the positive side. And it's all series round right here. So what's happening is, when that motor kicks on, the brushes make the connection, spin the motor, make and break in the connection, and right there from that one side is, it shuts the motor off and pulses the, allows for the flyback, or it turns the motor on, charges up the coil, and back and forth, back and forth. Right there is the magic, right there in the center of that deal by the rotary switch. So, I hope I made that simple enough to understand. Anyway, that's also posted on the doggone podcast page, the Mad Science podcast page. Let me see what else we're looking at. Oh, also, there are different types of transistors. So if you click on the Wikipedia link that Stephen Gibbons put in there, it'll actually give you some information on transistors and different types of transistors. And if you scroll down, you'll see some of the uses of them. Dude. Okay, there's schematics and all kinds of stuff on this Wikipedia article. Pretty good information. Stephen Gibbons, he's also working on that resource page that has tons of links for all kinds of alternative energy and websites and stuff out there. If you can actually get all these people in the same doggone mode of thinking, get them all on the same team to start working on stuff, you can put these things together overnight pretty much. It's that simple. Every bit of answers that we need are right there on the table. Every bit, all the pieces of the puzzle. This rotary switch right here is going to give you the most powerful punch for the magnetic field that you use off of whatever power source you input, and it doesn't have to necessarily be a battery. We can talk about capacitor technology as well, pressure. So you could use a little system that runs off of a 9 volt battery and produces a high voltage, high frequency, and it'll pressurize capacitors. When the capacitors get fully charged up, it'll actually kick on this rotary switch and dump all that energy right into your coils, and then you'll be able to ramp that current up to where you want it. It's ridiculously simple, folks. So what I said in the chat room in there when I first fired this show up today was that the key to free energy is yours. And if you decide to use it and make the world a better place, that's what we're trying to do here on the Mad Science Show. I'm going to show you everything I can possibly find. There's people putting information in here all the time. The key is, you got to take this energy, you got to take this knowledge, and you got to use it. You got to help people that have good ideas to manufacture and build things. If you can build the sturdiest, best rotary switch, I'd be willing to buy one from you. You know, and there's different materials that will not build up carbon from a high voltage arc as fast as something else. You know, voltage is pressure. And you get too high voltage, that's what they use for welding. So, you know, when you got an understanding of that, and you know how much power is actually available in your average 12-volt battery, you're going to be amazed. And that means that we could design systems that, like, years ago there was a deal where a guy literally built a generator that ran off of 110 volts AC because he understood how the mechanics of the electricity was working. He essentially built an electric motor generator. And so he plugs it in the wall, and he was able to run the rest of his entire house off of that one socket. And so his light bill went way down. Well, it didn't make no sense to the power company, because how could your light bill go way down if you're still running all your house? It didn't make no sense. So essentially what they tried to do is accuse him of stealing electricity. He wasn't stealing the electricity. He was paying for what he was using. He just basically rerouted that energy and used it in a much more efficient manner. Well, you really don't hear about those folks anymore, because either they get paid off or snuffed out, so to speak. Maybe straight out snuffed out. Either way, he had an understanding of how electricity worked, and he understood how to store power. He understood how to move it around and use it the most efficient as possible. And for the price of one outlet, was able to run the rest of his entire house. It's that simple. And so if you got a 40 watt solar panel and you know how to use that energy, you can do a whole lot more with that solar panel than you could possibly imagine. You don't have to go out and buy one of these massive arrays of solar panels in order to produce enough energy to run your house. When you look at what your house actually does and what each of the loads that you're going to be putting on that solar panel actually does, and you use a mechanical mind to try to figure out another way to do the same job with less energy, then that's when you'll figure it out. You could run a 12 volt, or you can run a compressor strong enough to do your refrigerator off of 12 volts. But instead, we use 120 volts at whatever watts it requires to run a refrigerator or a freezer or anything. When you understand how that compressor actually works and what kind of resistance it's got to fight to build up that pressure, you can find easier ways to do the same exact job. And once you understand the difference between how the HVAC heating and cooling function, heat transfer, heat pump systems, heat exchange systems, and all that kind of stuff, then you can find easier ways using less energy to do the same exact job. But it's not that we don't got the technology. It's that people don't want you to know that it's already in existence. They got little mini fridges that you can plug into your cigarette lighter that use Peltier elements. And they're using a heat exchange system. One side gets cold, the other side gets hot. And while they're pretty harsh on your batteries, if you're running things constant, there are ways that you could literally make them more efficient. And so where there's a will, there's a way. That's what the research is for out here. That's why every time I get some sort of idea, I'll make some sort of crude model and test theory, and then it's no longer theory, it's actual scientific method being utilized to define the best way to do whatever needs to be done. Right now we need more affordable electricity. They always talk about more affordable health care. Why don't they put more affordable electricity on the table and stop trying to punish those who try to get off the power grid that are buying solar panels and wind turbines and stuff and utilizing the forces of nature to do the same job that they keep hollering says are calling it causing carbon emissions and causing climate change and such. Anyone with common sense, anybody with any kind of knowledge in their brain at all knows that climate change and global warming and all that is a big old hockahooey. Doesn't match basic science. The science is flawed. It's bogus. And their reaction for fixing this is to go out and spray crud in the air. Seriously. They said that they got to try to reduce the sunlight coming in, you know, kind of like a volcano does. On one hand, they're saying the carbon emissions is actually trapping in the heat. And on the other hand, they're saying that they can actually block it out by spraying crud in the air. Seriously, folks, I know that there are stupid people in this world, but I'm not one of them. And if you pay attention to what's going on, they ain't helping the planet out. They're helping their wallet out, for one. But the other deal is they're making a mess out of nature. They're killing off trees and all kinds of other stuff with this crud. You're not supposed to be dumping that crap in the air, but they do. And when they do that, and then they turn around and blame it on you for driving your car or using too much electricity at your house. Now, who's the madman here? Folks, the truth is here. It's on the table. Free energy is real. No ifs, ands, or buts. Irrefutable, undisputable, and I challenge anyone. Anyone who thinks that their science is better than my science to come to the doggone table and tell me why it can't be done. And if you're coming to the table with the laws of thermodynamics, you might as well not even open your mouth. Because the laws of thermodynamics, and I'm going to pause just for a second to let you get your ears ready. The laws of thermodynamics do not apply to free energy. Yeah, I said it. And I'll say it to any physicist out there. I say it to any electrician, electronics engineer. I say it to any mechanic, anybody out there. The laws of physics are not written in stone. The laws of thermodynamics is just a bunch of, it's a hockahooey is what it is. It's a way to explain why it is that you can't get perpetual motion. And the closed loop system, it has to be able to start itself. It has to be able to run under its own power. And the laws of thermodynamics is there to say that over unity, zero point, and perpetual motion is not possible. It has absolutely nothing to do with free energy. Because I don't care if I have an outside power source, such as the sun, or the wind, or the water, or a combination of every single one of them, and basically aiming energy from every direction into the same. I don't care if the energy has to come from somewhere, anywhere, everywhere, as long as that thing turns on, and it stays on, and it runs my lights, then it's free energy, and it's perpetual motion. Period. So if you're coming to the table to argue the laws of thermodynamics to try to tell me why it is you couldn't run a car on pure distilled water, then I'm going to say, sorry, my friend, but you didn't pay attention in science class, and you're trying to use some sort of old wives' tale to try to convince me that science was wrong and that water isn't hydrogen and oxygen, and that if you know how to separate them properly then you can utilize those both for fuel and for heating and cooling. And then you could actually take your same said laws of thermodynamics and you could heat up or cool down the cylinders using too much power. That's the whole deal. So everything they teach people in college is how to not ever look outside the box. How to believe that everything that science, mainstream science, says is true, and anything that anybody else says is called pseudoscience. Well, I don't like to be rude, but I like to tell those people to take their pseudoscience label and put it where the sun don't shine. You don't think I call it mad science for nothing. I call it mad science because the answers are right there on the doggone table, been there on the table all along. There's technology that goes all the way back to the 1800s and prior that, if properly utilized today, would give us the most clean, efficient running machines that would allow us to live in the lap of luxury and enjoy the air conditioning and the heating and the cooling and fresh water for everyone on this planet. Yet some greedy you-know-whats out there decided they want to put a meter on everything under the sun, including the sun and the wind and the oxygen that you breathe. Then they want to try to tell you that something that is heavier than oxygen is magically making it up there where oxygen can't go. And if you've listened to your indoctrination instructors out there, then you will believe whatever they say. And you will quote it over and over and never one time use a scientific observation to prove or disprove it, and you will be a groupie. A NASA groupie or a science groupie. Bill Nye the Science Guy. Ain't even real science guy. He even said that. And the other jive turkey dropping the microphone on there. What the heck? Neil deGrasse Tyson. Not even a real science guy. A speculator. A astrophysicist. Yeah, I can tell you there's planets out there and there are all kinds of larger, possibly life-giving planets around that one there, because I see this light that's supposedly trillions of miles away and it's blinking and it tells me that there's something spinning around it. Are you freaking kidding me? That's not scientific observation, that's theory. It's all theoretical. You ain't been out there. You haven't been able to measure nothing. You don't know what's out there. You got a little blinky light, and you're telling me that because this light seems to wobble a little bit, that there's a big planet around it? And I'm supposed to buy that one? And then you tell me that something that is heavier than oxygen is magically making it up there where oxygen can't go? And I'm supposed to believe your story? Yeah, it's. You think I call it mad science for nothing? No, folks. When I was in science class as a child, I studied science. I paid attention. I loved science. Real science. Not that crazy stuff that they indoctrinate people to believe in these days. I'm talking about real science, real on-hands experiments where you take a penny and a nickel and you stick it in a lemon and stick your tongue on it and you can feel electrical charge going on. First chemical battery. Alright? And once you understand what's going on in that, heck, you can expand on that. You can find stronger acids to make stronger results. And you can learn about galvanized metal and copper and the galvanic action where it actually produces a current. You can understand that inside the dirt that's around you, there's all kinds of minerals and different things. And you can utilize that to literally pull energy right out of the doggone dirt. You can ground things to the ground and pick up a charge from the atmosphere because you understand static charges and friction and all that kind of stuff. So I paid attention in science class. And now I got people like Neil deGrasse Tyson, bogus science guy. What was that other jerk's name I mentioned earlier? Bill Nye the Science Guy. And I'm listening to these guys spit out a bunch of unscientific craziness, and then you have a group out there that practices scientism as like some sort of religion? Oh, come on, folks. Real science is scientific observation where you test something, you try it before you deny it, you measure it, you see if you can repeat it, and you write down your findings and you share it with everybody and his brother. And as far as anything else out there, it's all theoretical. Just because you think that's the way something happens doesn't mean that's necessarily the case. We've still got a lot of learning to do. But as far as telling me that somewhere millions of trillions of light years away, we're being able to tell what kind of materials are on this planet just because of the color of the light that's coming across there, don't be ridiculous. Seriously. Energy is free. If you don't believe it, then you'll never use it. And if you don't believe it's possible, just like Henry Ford said, if you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. So that's it. That's it in a nutshell. If you don't think energy's free, then keep paying an electric bill. That's what I'm saying. See, right now, I'm still on the power grid. I'm still paying a light bill. Why are you paying a light bill? You can know all this about electricity. That's right. That's right, I do. And when it's all said and done and I go off the power grid, I'm going to do it with such incredible style that it's going to grab some attention. That's a fact. And when, by the time we make this journey together through the Mad Science Show and the Mad Science YouTube channel, we get to the other side, everyone there is going to know everything and how it works. They're going to have a simple understanding of it, and they're going to know that they can replicate it using things right off the store shelf. Transistors, MOSFETs, 555 timers, rotary switches, rotary spark gaps, vacuum spark gaps, difference in coil windings, difference in gauges of wire, so that if you want a lot of current to be able to flow, you use a larger pipe. If you want to pressurize that current into higher pressure, higher voltage, then you make the pipe thinner, and so on and so forth. Being able to get the most amount of force, leverage, pressure out of everything that you do. And when you do that, that means that you understand that every time you leave something plugged into your wall that has a transformer in it, it's drawing energy off of your house. Your TV is drawing energy. Your anything that's got a memory on it, anything that has a transformer, your battery chargers, your phone chargers, whatever, all of them are using power even when you're not using that appliance. A guy on YouTube did a video where his doggone cable box was drawing 600 watts a day. That's 600 watts times how many ever days for his billing cycle. Just by unplugging his cable box, he knocked off about a third of his electric bill. Just when unplugging it whenever he wasn't using it. That was it. And so if you try that deal right there, if you only leave the necessities plugged in, what actually has to be plugged in whenever you're using it, you turn it on when you're not using it. And even when you're using, you know, like, let's say you got a power strip and it's got all the other stuff, you only turn on what it is that you need to use, is what I'm trying to say. If you don't need 10 lights in the house on, then you only turn one on and you turn your TV on, and so you got a reading light or so you can see where you're going to and fro the TV or whatever. There's ways of making your energy usage more efficient, and there's ways of taking the energy that you do purchase to utilize in the most efficient manner. And if the power company wants to shut you off, then you can turn your power back on using knowledge that I'm setting your pointing out to everybody. So you'll actually be able to have electricity during the apocalypse and so on and so forth. Because even out there, all the junk that people throw away all day long, they're throwing away a gold mine. They're throwing away capacitors, resistors, transistors, MOSFETs, 555 timers, all kinds of circuitry that could be recycled. It's mind-blowing. And so, let's just see. I got to click on this, see what this is. But so what are you trying to show there with that picture there, Steven? He said, I thought it was Oregon. This is one colony's mycelium footprint. I don't know. Maybe he's talking to somebody else. But anyway, yeah, I don't call it mad science for nothing. Science is all based on belief system and theoretical. And electricity can be based on pure fact. That you can see action, you can see a reaction, you know how to get the best out of what you're doing. And it's not, like I said, it's not like that we don't have enough energy. We got more energy than we could ever use in a trillion lifetimes if we stop wasting the heck out of it. And as far as the CO2 emissions and the so-called global warming / climate change / climate disruption or whatever it's going to be next week when the math don't add up and the bogus science can't get their act together, it's pure ridiculousness is what it is. There ain't no climate change other than natural climate change. And it's not coming from your breath, and it's not coming from cow farts, and it's not coming from your tailpipe of your car. If you're worried about the exhaust emissions in your car and you don't like them because they kind of stink or whatever, then let's all get together and let's design the car that runs on pure distilled water. Because it can be done. It has been done. Doggone Stan Myers did it, and somebody whacked him because he didn't want to give the information to the wrong people, so he wanted to give it to the people, and then they turned around and whacked him. Did anybody out there know that John Bedini ain't around anymore? He met his demise. His brother met his demise. John Bedini was trying to show people free energy. Stan Myers was trying to show people free energy. Tesla was trying to show people free energy. There's been so many before and so many during this time that have been trying to show people free energy, and those who get too close to the deal get whacked. Folks, I ain't worried about getting whacked. But if I'm sitting out here shouting all four points of the compass, pointing out ideas and how things function to you, and you're not utilizing it, I don't know what to tell you. Because if you want the world to be a better place, and if the governments of the world really wanted the world to be a better place, then it would be a better place already. So the information's on the table, dinner's ready, soup's on, however you want to say it. Now it's time for you to come to the table. It's time for you to get your friends to come to the table. It's time for everybody who really wants to resolve the so-called energy crises of the world. So-called starvation and sickness and homelessness and all that kind of stuff. It's time. It's been past time, but now I'm saying everything is right there on the table. When you're ready to resolve these issues and you come together in masses, we'll join each other around the round table and we'll make it so. But in the meantime, just share your videos with the conspiracies of what the terrible government's doing to you and just leave it be. Whatever will be, that kind of deal. You know, the government only does what the government does to you because the people of the world allow it to be so. The bad people of the world only get by with murder because people allow them to do so. When you want to stop allowing them to do so, you get all your brothers and sisters from around the globe, you bring them together, and you use that little deal that the guy from Ants. I'm going to play this if I can find it. This little clip is a grasshopper telling somebody, pushing the wrong buttons ain't cool. Let's see. It didn't show nothing there. Let's try ants. Maybe that ain't spelled right either. Doggone it. It's down there somewhere. I gotta find this doggone thing. Really? Come on, man. Alright, well, I'm just going to have to keep on looking through there and see if I can find the doggone thing. I had it somewhere. There was a little sound clip of the ants. And basically, the grasshopper said to the other grasshoppers that they outnumber us 100 to 1. And the moment they realize that, our way of life is over. That's how it works. So, if you don't like something that people are doing, then...
It was that ant that stood up to me.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh.
One ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Now, see? That's what we're up against. Justin said, or Stephen Gibbons said, just don't hit the big red button. You should be okay, Shaziz. It's always the big red ones that blow stuff up. That's true, man. You stay away from those red buttons. But you know something? I used to talk about this all the time. If you built a box, and inside this box, you had a boxing glove on a compressed spring, and you had a sign right next to this box that says, under no circumstances, push this button. Somebody gonna do it. Somebody gonna step up to that box, they're gonna push the button, the boxing glove's gonna come flying out, and it's gonna bust them in the face, and then they're gonna say, well, that happened. Well, let me think. You saw a sign that said, under no circumstances, push this button. And yet, you push the button. So you got popped in the mug. That's how things work sometimes. Anyway, real science. I'm bringing real science back. I don't think it was ever completely gone because I believe there's a lot of researchers out there that really honestly believe in real science. And maybe we might even actually have to change the name of it because science has gotten such a bad name with mainstream scientists out there. The Neil deGrasse Tysons and the Bill Nyes of the world. Ridiculousness. And those folks out there that will, you know, promote climate change and climate disruption. You tell me that these folks, they know how to literally make a cloud. They literally know how to make it rain. They literally know that you can take high frequency waves and you can energize gas into the fourth state of matter. You can superheat the upper ionosphere and you can cause an action. For every action is an equal and opposite reaction, is what they said. And so when you bounce that up there, it's got to come back down somewhere and it's cause and effect. And if you hit the right frequency of anything, you can vibrate it to the point where it literally shatters or even maybe even just starts What the heck is that, man? I have to click on that to see what that is. I think I found me another knucklehead, man. Alright, let me see here. Creator Studio. Alright, so I don't know. Let me see here. Trying to find something. Where in the heck did that come from? I hate it when it does all that. The rogue scientist commented on my death ray video. That was embarrassing to watch. See? That's what I'm talking about. The whole thing about this thing is, these people can't watch a video and they can't see past what the school book said. And so they get frustrated and they say stupid stuff like that on my videos. But they'll figure it out one day. They'll figure out that they're not as wise as they thought they were. And that all that time that they spent being indoctrinated, what a mess. Okay, let me see here. Trying to get this doggone thing to stop loading stuff when you don't want it to load. Anyway, I think I'm going to take a quick music break, get my brain a rest, and then come back. If anybody wants to join me on the Mad Science Show, either throw a thumbs up out there or something. I'm going to put on a couple tunes and take a breather. So, let's see what I got going on here, man. See, this is bad for radio. I got to have somebody who's like more well-versed in or extra hands in there, if you understand what I'm trying to say. Hey, I can't even use the word understand because it's offensive to somebody. Don't understand me. That's terminology. That's just degrading. Whatever. Grow up, people. This is Mad Science Show. Stay tuned.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
goddamn is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
It was that ant that stood up to me.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh.
One ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant. Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100-1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Hey, Doc, this is it.
Never mind that. Never mind that now. Never mind that. Never mind.
Why, that's me. Look at me. I'm an old man.
Hey, I'm Dr. Emmett Brown. I'm standing here on the parking lot. At
thank God I still got my hair.
October 26th.
What on earth is this thing I'm wearing?
Wow, this is a radiation suit.
Radiation suit? Of course. Because of all the fallout from the atomic wars. This is truly amazing. A portable television studio. No wonder your president has to be an actor. He's got to look good on television.
Whoa, this is it. This is the part coming up, Doc.
No, this sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
What did I just say?
The flux capacitor stores. This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts! 1.21 gigawatts! Great Scott! What the hell is a gigawatt? How could I have been so careless? 1.21 gigawatts! Tom, how am I going to generate that kind of power? It can't be done, can it?
Doc, look, all we need is a little plutonium.
Oh, I'm sure that in 1985, plutonium is available in every corner drugstore, but in 1955, it's a little hard to come by. Marty, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid you're stuck here.
Whoa, Doc, stuck here? I can't be stuck here. I got a wife in 1985. I got a girl.
Is she pretty?
She's beautiful. She's crazy about me. Look at this. Look what you wrote here, Doc. I mean, that says it all. Doc, you're my only hope.
Marty, I'm sorry, but the only power source capable of generating 1.21 gigawatts of electricity is a bolt of lightning.
What did you say?
A bolt of lightning. Unfortunately, you never know when or where it's ever going to strike.
We do now.
Is it? This is the answer. It says here that a bolt of lightning is going to strike the clock tower precisely 10:04 p.m. next Saturday night. If we could somehow harness this lightning, channel it into the flux capacitor, it just might work. Next Saturday night, we're sending you back to the future.
So, you're listening to Mad Science. So, I mentioned earlier, don't be surprised if you see old Shazizz come flying past your house riding a bolt of lightning one day. Because I have an understanding of how energy travels. And so, with that said, if it can be done, it might just very well be done. Anyway, let me see here. What's next on the agenda? Heck, I think we pretty much talked about everything that there is to talk about on this deal. You know, the doggone mainstream scientists, they frustrate the heck out of me. Question is, how much of what they say can they prove? That's the thing. You know, how many people can prove what they say as far as theoretical science or astrophysicists or whatever, you know? Nobody's ever really seen the electron. It's kind of theoretical, so we don't necessarily know that the electron even exists. We can see things pretty small and see something going on down there. But according to the way it's all set up, it's moving pretty doggone fast. And has anybody ever dissected an atom to see what's exactly inside of it or what's going on? You know, science says a lot of stuff. You know, like talk about things are magical, you know. They don't understand what exactly gravity is. And people have ideas of what gravity is, but nobody can really see gravity. We can see an effect happening. But we don't know exactly what it is. Could be something as simple as static cling, like whenever you get some lint stuck on you, or like styrofoam, the way the styrofoam clings to everything. Could be like that. Or it could be something like buoyancy, where, you know, lighter objects are able to float up and heavier objects sink to the bottom. It could actually be something as simple as pressure. You know, a lot of atmospheric pressure, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, and whatever else is in the atmosphere, and the pressure of all that holding things to the surface of a ball or whatever. Maybe even a flat earth. Who knows? I don't know. I don't personally care, really. I don't care what shape the earth is. I care what shape the earth is actually in. But, you know, I make some people mad because I even entertain the concept of a potential earth being flat or whether it's being round or whatever, because they don't understand what it is that I'm trying to say to them. If these people out there, however misguided they are looking at something with a questioning eye and they're using scientific observation to try to prove or disprove their ideas or their theories or whatever, then I could have some respect for them. But if they're just repeating something that somebody else said as fact, when in reality, if you trace it down to its basis of origin, then you realize that it's just theory. It's what they believe they saw. That's it. And scientific fact is something you can do. You know, put your finger in the fire and, you know, it gets hot and it burns and you don't want to do it. But you know that as many times as you do it, it's going to get the same exact result. That's the scientific method. Test it, prove it over and over again. Theory, on the other hand, looking at a light in the sky and saying, well, yeah, because it's this color and that color and this bouncing around or fluctuating, that this must be the case and that must be the case because, you know, this is what we see in certain circumstances of other things, and you know what I'm saying. Anyway, yeah, that's what I was getting at. That's perfect, man. Man, is there any way to put my face on that? Yeah, that's it. That'll be me riding a lightning bolt. Yeehaw! I'm gonna save that. Somebody know some graphic artists out there, have them make a picture of Oshaziz riding a lightning bolt. That's funny. Anyway, I have an understanding of what electricity is. Do I know exactly what it is? I believe so, but nonetheless, I know the results. I know how to manipulate it and how to get the best pressures or the higher voltage. It's basically, once you understand how to use water, and you'll understand how to use electricity. They all go hand in hand. Water always tries to find its level, so does electricity. And when you understand that, you know, different polarities such as north and south on a magnet also apply to magnetic fields, that there's a north and a south on a magnetic field, and opposites attract, and the same repels. So, you know how to get mechanical motion out of something using those forces. And when you put the energy into a device such as electric motor, AC electric motor, whatever, there are alternators out there that they say that are self-igniting alternator fields, because they hold a residual magnetic field in there, just enough to cause a reaction. So that's a key right there that somebody should have paid attention to. Somebody did, because they made a self-energizing alternator, self-exciting alternator. And for those folks that don't understand what self-exciting means, the alternators have a coil in there that you have to put 12 volts of power to. That produces the magnetic field that whenever you turn the rotor using the belt drive system, that it uses those forces in order to charge your battery up. Well, self-exciting, you don't have to put that power to the alternator to do it. It already has in the rotor some residual magnetic charge from the last time you used it as a charging device. And so it essentially magnetized the rotor. Turn the rotor into the equivalence of a permanent magnet. Well, not so permanent because it's residual, but nonetheless. You can take any piece of metal, run a current around that metal, and you can magnetize that metal. That's how electromagnets work. That's how solenoids work. And with that understanding, and then understanding that even with residual magnification, magnetism anyway, even with residual magnetism, you put a magnetic field anywhere near that opposite polarity, it will attract. Same polarity, it will repel. That should tell you that you don't have to have a massive magnetic field to get work done, which means that they've been doing it wrong all along. Don't need as much power to get electric motor to do exactly what it does. And so if you figure that out, then you can understand how it works good enough, then you can design the perfect motors, the perfect super efficient motors. And the key to all of those is, if you look into science and you understand the physics of thermal reactions to stuff, everything has a thermal breakdown point. That's basically when a material gets soft right before it, you know, gets red hot, you know, or even burst into flames for that matter. There's a thermal breakdown to where every single material will fail. And if you can keep that thermal breakdown from ever occurring in your electric motors, then those electric motors will last forever. Excuse me. And the key to understanding the thermal breakdown in a transformer is the type of materials that you're using for the core. The laminates, while they have separated insulated plates stacked on top of each other, will allow for that saturation and the magnetic flux to slow down long enough to give you the strongest pulse out of something. Those, because of the metal itself, will generate heat. And so they have what's known as a ferrite core, that because of the material in it that has like a ceramic in there, and the material will still allow that saturation of the core, but resist the heat buildup in there, which will make those types of transformers work better and last longer because they don't get hot as fast. When that metal core gets hot. If you notice on a transformer, in between the metal core and the actual windings itself is a what looks like a piece of paper. It's an insulation, basically like putting a pot holder underneath your hot bowl so that you don't burn your hand. So if that metal gets hot, it's not going to transfer that heat as easy through to the copper windings and allow those copper windings to begin to get hot. Once those copper windings get to a certain temperature and the insulation on the copper wire fails, when it reaches its thermal breakdown, then that will melt away and all those wires will be touching each other. Instead of 1,000 turns, you'll have 1 turn of wire, which is a dead short, and there you go, man. It won't run. And so we got all that figured out. If you can keep the doggone heat away from those copper wires, pulling too much current through there will cause resistance. It will cause the same friction. It will turn around and cause those wires to get hot. You don't need that much current in order to get it done. And the residual magnetic field on the self-exciting alternators are proof of concept. That's scientific method and observation that can be tested. That's not theory. Everything that you hear here on Mad Science Show is going to be based off a scientific observation, the scientific method, where you can test and repeat and measure and all that kind of stuff and observe, and you can find out how things actually work. And by testing other things that are already in existence, store shelves, like fish tank air pumps, you could build a little mini generator using a fish tank air pump. There's a little electromagnet inside there. It's a coil around a core, and then there is a little arm that has a couple little magnets that are connected to a diaphragm, and whenever you pulse that with AC current, that electromagnet with AC current, it causes that other magnet on that arm to vibrate the diaphragm in and out and pumps air into your fish tank. Well, you could take that coil that's already wound out of the fish tank air pump, mount it to something and make a magnetic rotor or flywheel system that will spin past that, go from north to south to north to south to north to south, and it will change that polarity back and forth inside the copper windings and energize that coil and put out energy out the other side. And depending on how fast that you're spinning that around will determine the frequency range that you get out the other side. So that's it. I mean, every single electric motor out there could be turned into a generator just by a little bit of understanding on how to do things. You could turn an AC rotor into a magnet using residual magnetism, and or you could actually modify that rotor to mount stronger magnets in there for a stronger pulse. Rare earth magnets or neodymium magnets, really strong magnets, and in reality you don't really need a really strong magnet. A little cheapo ceramic magnets would be just fine. It's about how many times you're spinning that thing around, how fast you're spinning it, or how slow you're spinning it, and you will still induce a current in that copper wire, which we call electricity. So there's tons of stuff on the store shelves. There's tons of stuff that people throw away on a regular basis that you can use for electricity. Now, when you find out your maximum potential of whatever type of energy you got coming out of it, then you can design your systems afterwards to either store that energy, to build up pressure, to be able to run things on demand. Finding a different way to use it. So that fish tank air pump is capable of utilizing that energy for just the same purpose that your current coming out of your wall is doing. You just got to know how to move it around, how to change it around, how to bring it back into the version that your toaster's used to using. A tungsten element or nichrome wire, that the heating elements that they use inside of light bulbs and toasters and stuff like that, they don't need a lot of current. Right now, that's what they use. They use a lot of current to produce resistance. It causes that thing to get so hot from the backup of current that it causes it to not only use a lot more energy on your electric bill, but it causes it to get hot and cooks your toast. The same exact thing, you could send a frequency range through that tungsten or that nichrome wire and vibrate that at its resonant frequency and cause that nichrome wire to get hot, and all you did was put a small amount of voltage in order to kick a transistor on and off and produce a frequency range that was higher around the range, same range as that nichrome wire's resonant frequency, and you can cause it to vibrate so rapidly that it produces friction, which in turn produces heat and cooks your toast for less input. That's efficiency, folks. That's all we're talking about. You see, if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough. It's all around you. The earth is energy. Everything is energy. Just like when you separate the water molecule into its two separate components, hydrogen and oxygen, you got two powerful sources of fuel. And there's other things out there. Look up the doggone, look up table salt, man. One of them's a highly explosive gas and one of them's a highly toxic poison, basically. And together it makes table salt. I have to look that up again. But you know, when you talk about breaking down the chemistry of actual things, I mean, you can eat table salt and not die. You know, unless you eat too much and get high blood pressure. But you can also eat sugar and not die. But sugar is also a powerful explosive if you know how to use it properly. Water is a powerful explosive if you know how to use it properly. And so what we're talking about when we're talking explosive or implosive is energy power. Power, pressure, energy. Everything's energy. Anything will burn if it's atomized or vaporized, and if you design an engine to specifically run off of any specific material or fuel source, then you can get it to run. Now, I drew a picture up. I don't know if I'm going to take a peek real quick. See if it's on the Mad Science deal. I think it is on there. I'll open that in a new tab and I'll see if I can find one specific picture. But I want to repost this picture link in the chat room because it's called a focused heat engine. And basically it takes all the physics and the forces of nature, everything we know about, and uses those to our advantage. Let's see if I can find this doggone thing. I post a lot of pictures on here if you really paid attention. Let's see, hydro heat engine. Let's see, I'll just get that one right there. That one's good enough. But there's several different possibilities on there. I'm just gonna get this one right here because this is the easiest one to get a hold of. Copy. Alright. Now, I've had arguments with people who are supposed mechanics because they don't get it. They don't understand. And they're always trying to jump right into the second law of thermodynamics and the first law of thermodynamics, and they're sitting there trying to tell me why it is that this will not work. It's because they don't have an understanding of how it works. They're not understanding what it is I'm trying to say. I call this a hydro heat engine, heat transfer view. If you look at this, it's basically a internal combustion engine. Not a two-stroke, I believe. So, around this thing, you have a water tank that goes through a coiling system that goes all the way around that entire cylinder, right? And that coiling system is so that that water can circulate through there for two purposes. One, to either preheat the fuel, which is the water, and the other one is to cool down the cylinder. So we want to get this temperature up to 300 degrees Fahrenheit, because water boils at 212 degrees at sea level. Well, we want to bring this cylinder up to 300 degrees Fahrenheit, but we don't want this thing to ever be able to reach its thermal breakdown, so that the rings and the piston and the cylinder walls actually begin to destroy themselves when they finally reach that thermal breakdown point. And so what we want to do is we want to take and use an induction heating system. If you notice down there, there's a plus and a minus on there. They're down there on that coil because you can take an induction heating circuit, and you can cause this thing, to whatever's inside that coil of wire, to get hot. And you can put it on just long enough for that cylinder to reach 300 degrees Fahrenheit and then shut that circuit off. Then as the water is being circulating through there, it's picking up that heat, and it's going down into a storage chamber for it could store in an insulated deal. Got this all water's all heated up down there. It's like a boiler system. And then it'll go through an atomizer, break the water down a little bit more, and then it'll finally go through a vaporizer, and then it'll be injected into the cylinder. Once that vaporized water hits that 300 degree cylinder, it's going to instantaneously superheat and flash the steam, pushing that piston down. When the piston goes down, the pressure will release out the exhaust system, and the exhaust system, if you notice on the same exact deal, has a coil that goes back around to the storage tank, so you're using the heat of the exhaust to actually pre-treat the temperature of the water inside of this doggone tank down here. And down in the oil portion of it, you actually have a heat exchanger system that is also taking heat away from the oil so that the viscosity of the oil doesn't break down. It don't reach its thermal breakdown, and it gets too thin, and the parts aren't lubricated properly, and then they begin to fail. But nonetheless, it's taking that heat away and using it to warm up the tank as well down there. So, doggone it, why does people keep doing that? Drive me nuts. Anyway, so it ain't that it can't be done. Diesel engines have been doing it. Diesels use compression ignition. And steam engines basically boil water into steam. Use that expansion, what I believe is like 1,600 times the volume of water when it expands into steam. It's a lot of pressure. In the 80s, we were using 650 to 1250 PSI boiler systems that were turning huge turbines and turning big screws that were moving a Navy vessel from one point to the next all over the world. And so we know that there's a lot of power, if you know how to use water, that you can use that water for many purposes. You can boil the water into steam, use that steam for pressure, or you can separate the water and use it for an implosion and an explosion at the same exact time. You can use compression ignition to ignite. You can use the separation and recombination of hydrogen and oxygen molecules to release a charge. So water's amazing. And then by the time it's all said and done, if it's a steam, by the time the steam gets out the other side, it's turned back into water in a hydrogen engine. By the time it gets back to the exhaust, it's turned back into water again. So you didn't even lose nothing. So energy can neither be created nor destroyed. There it is, right there. You know, where'd it go? You just used it, separated it, changed the state of matter, and used the power in all the reactions that you got from that in order to do this. But the whole thing is that you try to talk to a mechanic about this, or somebody who actually owns a machine shop or has access to it and knows how to build engines, they'll give you every single indoctrination points of view, talking points, and tell you why it is that you can't do it. And they want to call this a closed loop system. Look, the only reason for the laws of thermodynamics is to actually disprove any possibility of perpetual motion or overunity, or what some people mislabel as free energy devices. Free energy has absolutely nothing to do with over-unity, has absolutely nothing to do with zero-point energy, has nothing to do with perpetual motion, so therefore the laws of thermodynamics do not apply, period. No ifs, ands, or buts. Anybody want to argue that? Jump on the bandwagon and let's rumble. Because that's the way, you don't think I call it mad science for nothing. Not trying to get out more than they're putting in. Ha! That's cool. I like that. Stephen put a picture in there. Old Shaziz in his superhero suit riding a bolt of lightning. I saved that. Cool. Alright, so what I've been trying to say, forever and a day, energy is free. You can't find free energy. You're simply not looking hard enough for it. When the world decides they want to use it, we'll all get together, the brilliant minds, and we'll do just that. We'll use it. We'll make the world a better place. And if you think you're really educated because you went to college, I feel sorry for you. If you think that you're a genius because you figured out a lot of things and you can memorize what a lot of people said about physics and all this kind of stuff, I feel sorry for you. You know, anybody can learn and memorize everything out there that there is to memorize and sound brilliant. But if you're not willing to step outside the box and use the real scientific method and basic science and basic physics to make things so much better than what they are, then you're just a squawk box for the machine. That's it. You're not educated. You're indoctrinated. It's worse. And, you know, people got all these, high-tech terminologies, and they try to twist it like, you know, I got in a fight with somebody because they said that by me using the word understand, I was explaining something, I hope you understand what I'm trying to say, got offended by the word understand. Grow up, man. Seriously. Not everybody speaks the way you do. Not everybody uses the same terminology you do. But if I can put my point across, and that may be a word that I have to say, it's part of my vocabulary, you know, if I find a different, better word to say, does it make sense to you what I'm saying instead of understand or whatever? But nonetheless, people want to try to turn and twist terminology. They want to try to utilize the laws of physics to make themselves sound smarter when in reality all they're doing is making themselves sound ignorant because they're misquoting something that wasn't even there for the purpose of what it is that we're even talking about. We're not trying to get out more than we put in. We're not trying to defy the known laws of physics, even though I don't believe the laws of physics are written in stone. That I believe there's still so much more to learn. We're just trying to utilize every bit of energy to its maximum potential. And if you realize that a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of water has a massive amount of power if you know how to use it properly. That is the same thing that applies with electricity and water, both, all of them. They go hand in hand. You boil up a tiny amount of water, it will pressurize and it will expand 1,600 times its volume, and that pressure is enough to get work done. You separate the water molecule itself and ignite both of these separate components, and it has enough to get a lot more work done. If you understand about breaking that water down, atomizing, vaporizing, and pressurizing, then you can understand how electricity, you can make so many different forms of electricity with the same exact generator just by guiding that energy where you want it to go. They do it in circuit boards all along. Our computer technology that we got right now uses a material, silicone conductors and stuff to basically make things either conductive or resistive or whatever, to the point where you can speed stuff up and slow it down and make dots and ones and zeros, dots and dashes, turn into audible sound and imagery. And what you're seeing going on in there ain't no different than what it is that I'm talking about doing. It's using all those forces and understanding that every bit of energy out there is storable, every bit of energy is usable, voltage is pressure, and if you need more current, then you're going to use a larger pipe, slow it down, and put more into it. Right now, every doggone thing we got uses too much power. Now, granted, in the industry out there, you're starting to see some better electric motors coming on that are using less the energy. I mean, they got fans that are run off of a 5-volt USB charger. And there are other motors out there, stator motors and stuff, that are capable of doing a lot of stuff. The direct drive washing machine motors in the Fisher and Paykel and Samsung versions of the modern day washing machine are generators right out of the doggone gate without any modifications. They're actually a pulse DC motor because with a pulse DC motor, it doesn't require a transmission because DC current has a lot of torque to it. And so they figured all that out. Now they don't have to have a transmission or a belt inside the doggone washing machine. It's a direct drive. And it works better. It's more efficient. And they're not as noisy. But either way, all these different appliances that we got out here, there are alternate purposes that you could use them for. There's materials inside there, so when something breaks down, you don't have to just trash the whole thing. If your electric motor burns up and you want to take the time to take that copper wire off, re-insulate that copper wire, repair any breaks in it, rewind that copper wire back on the same exact core in the same direction that it was before, and that motor's just as good as it was before. And there are actually ways in which you can literally soak the copper windings, the copper cores, in different types of resins that will go in and seal up the gaps in between the wires and insulate it again. Somebody look into the process of how they actually coat the copper wire out there, and once you see how they coat that copper wire, then you'll see that copper wire could be recoated if necessary. The only reason why it ever goes bad is when that insulation breaks down, it produces a short in the system. That's it. But the copper wire is still good. And you can re-insulate it. You can recover it unless it's burnt in half or, you know, all trashed up. See, when you're using those electric motors and moving the electrons around according to electron theory, you're never losing material. You've got just as much copper as you had there when you started as you do when you're done. It's just moving around from point A to point B, and it's still there. You got just as much copper as you did before. And if you re-insulate it, and you can get the second use out of that same doggone motor, there's a thing called planned obsolescence out there where they want things to fail. We got chemists out there that are capable of building different types of resins that would never fail. You could coat these electric motors and they would never fail. And you can actually change the resistance of a material by the temperature of that material, by either cooling it down, making it less resistance, or heating it up to make it more resistance, whatever. Study on how the elements inside of your electric stove actually functions. And you'll see something amazing in there. When you put the power to your 220 stove and that element begins to get hot, first that current coming in causes resistance, which causes heat, and that heat gets so intense that it literally liquefies the core of that material that is surrounded by ceramic. So inside those red elements, when they get red hot like that, is a molten metal inside there. And this can be easily proven, but it's really dangerous, trust me. if you breach that core, somehow or another are able to nick that ceramic core while that thing is red hot, you'll notice that liquid metal will come out. Be a hot, molten lava, literally. And you can start a fire doing that and get seriously injured. But nonetheless, when that material gets hot and liquefied, it actually takes less current to keep it hot. And so the very first surge of power when you turn that thing on is what uses the most energy. And once it gets hot, the resistance factor changes and it don't take near as much power in order to maintain that temperature. Let's see, what happens to air when you heat it? It expands. Alright. That's how the Stirling engine works. Expansion and contraction of the gases. They go in different directions. Let's see, fluid pressure generator. I'll have to read this later. Anyway, using the forces of nature that are already out there, we know what causes things to get hot. I've said this I don't know how many times. If you get in the back of a pickup truck in the middle of the summer and you set on a spare tire back there because the tire's made out of rubber and it's black, it absorbs heat from the sun, and you'll burn your biscuits. Well, I know of cases where the sun had already gone down, but that tire still held its heat. And in the middle of the night, set on that doggone tire and burnt my biscuits. Because it didn't have time for that heat to dissipate and cool that tire down. So, anyway, you know all these different things, and you know that during the summertime you got heat beating down on your roof of your house, and if you had a way to reflect that heat off, it would be easier on your cooling bill. Because those asphalt roofs that on a lot of houses up there, composition shingles, they hold a lot of heat, and it causes the attic to get hot, so you have to put ventilation into the attic in order to allow that heat to escape. Well, if you already know that that doggone thing is going to be doing that, then you can design the same system. You literally take that heat and produce a mechanical motion with that heat. Matter of fact, if you look at those wind turbines, they're not always turning because it's windy outside. Sometimes it's the heat rising up through that that's actually causing them wind turbines to turn. If you go look at my video series, Free Thinkers, you'll see that in the video. Sometimes the wind isn't even blowing. It's just the heat from that heat box is rising up and causing the hot air, the cold air to produce a vortex and causing some mechanical motion to occur. So, basically what I'm trying to show everybody, things that already exist, using my mechanical gift to understand things and try to explain it in the simplest fashion. So I ain't got time to argue with somebody who believes themselves to be extremely educated because they went to college or got this piece of paper that says that they're an electrical engineer or theoretical physicist or whatever. Now, I don't deal in theoretical physics. I deal in factual science. If it's testable, provable, observable, and I can see a reaction, I don't have to guess why it is that when I stick my finger into the fire that my finger gets burnt and it hurts like heck. I can see that if I did it the first time and it burnt, and I did it the second time and the third time and the fourth time and the fifth time and the sixth time and so on down the line, that it's obvious to me that if you stick your finger in the fire, you're going to get burnt. So that's something that could be factual science. You stick your finger on an ice cube and it'll cool it down. So on down the line. Heat expands, cold contracts, it's all basic science. And if you have an understanding of any of that basic science, any of the basic physics, you can do amazing things. It's putting a doggone machine together properly as opposed to not properly. I got this motor that's called a flame licker. It has the fire on the outside of the motor. And it basically runs on the gases from the flame. And it's really not a safe engine. You start a fire, it's a fire hazard. But nonetheless, it still works. Because they understood the physics of how this was going on. Stephen said they used to use beeswax Kamuba? Is that what that said? Being the best to insulate their coils years ago, Bitumen, asphalt, they both lasted for years. Some runoff coils, runoff coils, are still running using beeswax insulation. Oh yeah, that's another thing too. That's good insulation. Also, mineral oil, non-conductive mineral oil. You submerge your coils inside of mineral oil, then it basically it helps to keep it insulated and cool at the same exact time, because it's not a conductive. Mineral oil isn't a conductor of electricity, and so you can actually help that coil to not have any breaker over voltage that would transfer in the opposite direction, therefore making it more powerful. The transformers that are out there on the poles basically use the same concept, where they submerge these coils in water, or not water, in oil, so that keeps the windings insulated from each other, but also acts as a dielectric in between plates that will cause it to be literally a capacitor slash step down transformer. So when the high voltage, high frequency is coming down the wire and it goes inside that transformer, it stores a pressure inside there, and then it steps that voltage down to where it's a usable current for your house now. So, once you understand that, you can build your own. You can build your own transformers. You can build your own efficient transformers out of PVC, aluminum, and old transformers that somebody threw in the trash. And build your own power grid. Simple as that. Now, what I say sometimes goes over some people's head, it may sound like it's really high tech, but it's not. And that's one of the reasons why I posted that deal from Daft Man. I'm not sure if he even still has a YouTube channel, but Stephen Gibbons did post a link to his website. But I'm impressed with this guy, because when he put these diagrams together, he did it in such a simple fashion that even if you're not a electrician or electronics engineer, if you just buy the parts that he points out in this deal, this tip 305 transistor with a base collector and emitter in that order right there, all you got to do is get on eBay and order tip 305, and there you go. You got the transistor. You could use MOSFETs. There's different types of MOSFETs that are basically acting exactly like transistors, but they got different pinouts, names, and stuff, where it all sounds high-tech terminology. All this is a really super fast-acting switch. That's it. That's all there is to it. He shows you where to put all your pins, where you need to solder your wires and connect all your parts together. And all you got to do is take your wires and follow the exact diagram. It's like following a maze and connect them to your coils just the way. Like on the trigger coil, there's a start of the run winding, or start of the trigger wire coil, and the ending of the trigger wire coil. It shows you right where to connect everything. Your variable resistor shows you where to connect it. Shows you everything, you know, right where you need to put the parts down. I mean, you just lay it on top of it, solder it in, and you're done. And hook it to your coils, and you just created the Bedini circuit. The schoolgirl diagram of the Bedini circuit. The simple circuit. And you can do amazing stuff with that circuit. You can make a pulse motor with that circuit that you can use to charge batteries and stuff. That's what the Bedini coil was all about. But Daft Man made it easy for the average Joe to understand. And that's what we need to do if we're going to be trying to teach people how to do stuff, is make it as easy to understand as possible. So don't come and argue with me about the word understand. Don't get all frustrated because I'm asking somebody to understand what it is I'm saying, because that's the only word that I know. Doesn't make any sense. You got what I'm trying to say or whatever. I don't go around and beat around the bush. I just use terminology that I'm accustomed to. And so don't be offended by the word understand, unless you're in court, and I can see why you might be a little bit worried about it. But I'm not trying to judge you or anything. I'm just trying to see if what I'm saying, the message that I'm giving you, is being conveyed properly. And you got I can't find another word. I'm not even going to try it. But nonetheless, when people decide they want to argue the laws of thermodynamics when you talk about free energy, walk away from them. Because they have no idea what they're talking about. They might be able to explain why they say that perpetual motion isn't possible, or over unity, or zero point, or whatever. But I have no idea, because the laws of thermodynamics do not apply to free energy. Period. No ifs, ands, or buts. So if you start trying to talk to somebody about free energy, and they start trying to quote the laws of thermodynamics, just turn around and walk away. And they're like, where are you going? Well, I can see you're kind of stuck in your indoctrination from the school, so you're not going to understand what I'm talking about. So I don't want to waste my time. Sorry. Peace and love. Take care. That's the way I'll do it. Because I'm not going to sit there and argue over perpetual motion when I'm not trying to get perpetual motion. I'm not trying to get over unity, and I'm not trying to get zero point in. I'm not trying to defy the known laws of physics, and I'm not trying to get out more than I put in. What I'm trying to do is show the world how to use the energy that is so abundant right now. You got more energy than you could ever use in a trillion, 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 bazillion lifetimes available to you. And if utilized properly, one little battery that I showed you in that deal, you see how much voltage was going on in there? When you tap that on there and you produce that field and nature slaps it back into place, did you see how much power that thing was putting out? And so a rotary switch is a way to pulse any power source that will allow it to build the strongest field, and then release all that energy stored up in that strong field. The equivalence of a firecracker, when you ignite the gas in that firecracker and expands, and that expansion finally bursts a container. It's not just the bursting container that you're contended with now. It's the scrap metal or materials, and it's the acoustic wave and everything else that you just created with that little bit of energy that you just released out there. So, firecrackers, hydrogen technology, electricity, water. Put your thumb over the garden hose and you can squirt somebody clear across the yard. You just moved that water from point A to point B, and you didn't lose any of it. The water still exists. Even the water droplets that got slowed down because they were at the tail end of that stream, the water droplets that got slowed down, they're still there. They absorbed into the ground. Nature recycled that energy, and it's still there. Energy can neither be created nor destroyed, is what they said. So where does it go? You just moved it from one place to the next. And that's what we need to figure out on how to use electricity, and that's what I've been showing everybody all along. It's not that you ain't got enough, it's that you're not using it properly. And when you start to use it properly, and you'll start to redesign your machinery to be the most efficient as possible, you can design a perfect internal combustion engine that you should be able to run that 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, and still be able to come down there and put your hand on that motor block and not burn your fingers. You should be able to sit down on top of that engine after you've been running around a drag race and going around the track for 300 laps at NASCAR or the Indianapolis 500, you should be able to sit on that engine and not burn your biscuits. That's true science. And the reason why people can't do it is because they won't pay attention to true science. They want to go into theoretical, They won't tell you with the laws of thermodynamics why it's not possible. They want to tell you about friction. They want to tell you about heat. They want to tell you about loss. And I want to tell you about solutions. Anything in this world, doesn't matter what it is or what material it's made of, as long as it cannot reach its thermal breakdown, it will not catch fire and it will not fail. And when you get an understanding of that, then you'll know how to use your materials properly. In the machinery that are running hard and strong and powerful, they always put a sacrificial metal before the most important part, such as a brass ring, and before the most important part, so that the softer metal will fail before the big part. And so if you see that something is starting to rattle in there, you can look in there and you can see that this brass bushing is wore out, and you can replace the brass bushing, which is cheaper than replacing the main part. But if you designed that piece of machinery to last to begin with, you wouldn't have that issue. It wouldn't matter if it was metal on metal. As long as that metal on metal could never reach its thermal breakdown point, it wouldn't fail. That's science. That is true science. So, where do we go to from here? The only thing I can do is keep doing what I do. Put ideas out here on the table. That rotary switch that I did the video on. If somebody wants to take that idea and expand on it, I'm going to repost this in the chat room so it doesn't get lost in the wave. And I think I already posted it, that one there. I'll repost it over here. So that it doesn't get lost in the wave of knowledge that's going through there. But if you click on that right there, that's basically how I hook the system up. The rotary switch is that little gray box in the center that has, two brass brushes and a gear that makes and breaks the circuit. If you could redesign that little section right there to have the best brushes and the best make and break contacts, and then put a motor controller on there right before one of the either negative side or power side, it doesn't matter as long as it's running series with it, then you can regulate the voltage in this motor. And you can speed it up and slow it down, and you can find the sweet spot in how much time that you want this magnetic field to be able to expand and collapse and give you the most power out of it. And that way, it makes it the most efficient possible. It's that simple. And you can do it all with a mechanical device without having to use transistors, MOSFETs, or 555 timers, or any of the equivalences out there, and it will be sturdy enough to be able to withstand the amount of voltage that this battery is actually capable of producing. There is more energy inside of these batteries than you can possibly imagine. And when you look at how a battery works, and you know that if you draw so much current that this battery will be able to balance itself out, and when I say balance, just like nature, water will find its level. Nature will do the same thing with electricity. It will find its level, and your battery will be what they call dead. It's out of energy. But it is not out of energy potential. You throw that battery right back off of balance, and you have just as much energy potential in a dead battery as you do a fully charged battery Once you figure that out, you can understand that there are different ways that you can store energy, such as capacitors, that you don't have to have a lead acid battery to store energy. You could do it in different fashion with capacitors, a capacitance, different dielectrics, so on down the line. You turn a battery into a combination battery and capacitor, or you can run capacitors just like batteries, as if it was a battery. It's so incredibly, ridiculously simple, folks. I'm putting it right on the table for you. Energy is free. Electricity is free. But until you take this information and start working with it, and spreading it, showing everybody, then the electric company is going to keep sending you a bill. And as long as you allow the government to punish those who decide to get off the power grid, try to charge them taxes or fine or threaten them to go to jail, then you're going to still be paying the man. It's as simple as that. But when the people of the world decide that they're tired of people starving to death, when they're tired of people being homeless, when they're tired of taking a big fat chunk of their earnings every month and sending it to the power company and the fuel industries, then they'll start paying attention to stuff like this. But right now it's too easy to go to the gas pump and just fill up. It's too easy to go over and just turn the light switch on. As long as you don't have to, out of sight, out of mind, I don't have to mess with it, I don't have to know nothing about electricity, all I got to do is run over there and turn the switch on. But if you're really truly seeking freedom out there, and justice for all, if you're really truly seeking free energy, or a solution to the imaginary climate change, or a solution to the imaginary energy crisis, or a solution to any thing out there for that matter. And common sense has to rule the day. And I could say this stuff for a trillion times in a row. I could put podcast after podcast after podcast and tell the world the energy's free, energy's free, energy's free. And I can tell you all different ways on how to find things that you can use for other purposes, repurposing junk that somebody threw in the trash and materials that are good for capacitors, and how to get galvanic actions out of two dissimilar metals, how to get thermoelectrics out of two dissimilar metals, how to store heat in the best materials to do so. All this kind of stuff, I can keep on passing this information like myself and Stephen Gibbons and Patty and everybody else who shows up out here, and Barbara and Muddy and all these folks out here that come in and join in on these shows on Saturdays and Sundays and stuff. I wished I could afford to do this all 7 days a week. But it'd be a whole lot easier to jump in here 7 days a week if people would actually share these podcasts with everybody out there. Share them. Get people in these doggone chat rooms. People who are really interested in fixing the world. If we outgrow the chat room, then we know we're going somewhere. Then we gotta go out and get a better chat room. If we basically send too much traffic to the site and it gets shut down because it's overloaded, then we know we're getting somewhere. When the world flocks to all these different networks, and I'm not just talking about Shaziz Radio, I'm talking about all of them. When the world starts flooding in and saying, no, we're here for answers. We heard there's answers here. We're here. We're here to help. You know? The government figured it out. The government knows how to tap into your resources. The government knows how to get you to be a policeman, and knows how to get you to be an army man, knows how to get you to do a lot of things. And the industries out there, they know how to get you to buy stuff. They know how to sell stuff to you. They know how to market from you. They know how to track you down and find out what it is that you're looking at to see what you're interested in. They know how to sell, sell, sell. And they know how to sell to you specifically. That's why they want tracking numbers on you. That's why they want control over you, because as long as they know what you're doing, then they know how to sell, they know how to manipulate, they know how to control you. And energy is no different than any of the other subjects you want to talk about out there. The government does not want you to know it is free. You go out there in the sun and you get a sunburn. You won't have to pay no money for that sunburn whatsoever. You might have to pay for the salve or whatever it is, burn ointment that you buy from the drug industry afterwards to get rid of the sunburn. Or unless you go talk to somebody like Patty or Barbara who's been around and they know some natural remedies that you can go pick up off your property that do the same thing and you can save some money just by getting it from nature. So even the cures to your ailments, nature's provided. It's all free, folks. The creator of this world gave it to us all. Every bit of it. All the food belongs to all of us. All the water belongs to all of us. All the skies, all the air belongs to all of us. All the nature belongs to all of us. And when we stop letting greedy, no good for nothing, low down chicken thieving, you know what's run this world, then we the people will actually get what we really wanted all along. Peace and love and harmony with nature and a better world for our future generations. That's what mad science is all about. That's what the Knights of the Round Table is all about. That's why it is that I do what it is that I do. That's why I subject myself to ridicule. That's why I subject myself to hours and hours of research. That's why I subject myself to trying to figure out better ways, easier ways to explain to people using whatever terminology they can understand in order so that they can find a way to freedom. That's what we were meant to be. We were supposed to be free, we were supposed to be caretakers, we were supposed to work in harmony with each other and nature and live here on a utopia, heaven on earth. And it's not too much to ask. Now I know every time I open my mouth and say anything remotely like that, some negativity naysayer will rush up out of there. Oh, well, you know, you can't get everybody to agree on this, and the government's not going to allow you, and they're going to kill you, and they're going to do all these terrible deeds to you, or whatever. They're going to steal from you, put you in prison, and all that kind of stuff. Folks, come on. I'm going to play it one more time. I'm going to play this. One more time. This came from a cartoon. If a cartoon got it figured out, maybe we could figure this out.
Was that ant that stood up to me?
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh.
One ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
There you go, folks. I'm just one of the ants, just like you. I can't do it all by myself. I really, seriously, down in my heart, want to save this world. I want to save it and preserve it for future generations. I want to restore the natural glory of our Creator. I want to show people that our Creator really exists in the most profound way. I want to ensure that the homeless are fed. There's nobody hungry. There's nobody starving. And I want to prove to the world that just like free energy, there's free medicine. Nature's provided all of it. There's knowledge, so much knowledge out there. If people ever decide to utilize the knowledge that we have access to, that there is nothing that together we cannot accomplish. So I do the Mad Science Show, and I do the Knights of the Round Table. As old King Shazuz the Terrible, who rules with an iron fist and a heart of gold. I don't know what more to say than that. Doggone it. The best way that anybody could help me, not to send me no money, that's not what I'm asking. Something more important, more valuable than money. Send some other free thinkers. Some people who really seriously care and honestly believe in the dream. Because when they and I and you get into the same room, folks of like mind, and we provide resources and materials for one another and our mind, that's how it gets done. That's how the positive pebbles and the pieces of the puzzle all come into play. That's how it gets done. And that grasshopper was telling those folks out there that, look, when those ants figure that out, there goes our way of life. We don't have to be a slave to the system. We don't have to be a burden to society. We can be good caretakers. We can work in perfect harmony with nature. And we can still live in the same lap of luxury that we have become accustomed to enjoy. Air conditioning, heating, lighting, fresh water, fresh food. And we can provide that for every single man, woman, and child on this planet. Or flat earth, whatever you think. I don't care. I don't want to argue about what shape the earth is. I just want to fix it. I want everybody to see what it is that I see through my eyes. I want you to see it for yourself. I'm telling you, our Creator put some miracles on the table for you. And if you're willing to pick up those miracles, and if you're willing to share your gifts and your miracles with others, you'll get it. All of us will finally get to see the big picture. What we were meant to be all along. And we won't have to watch all the wars and suffering and ridiculousness that comes about via greed and stupidity and ignorance. We don't have to sit here and allow our world to fall apart. While a few of them live up in ivory towers and eat with a gold or silver spoon, and some little kid somewhere in this world can't even find a crumb of bread. Share these podcasts. Share my videos. And I keep sharing the information. And I'll keep sharing my love. That's the best I got. You've been listening to Mad Science. Peace and love, everybody. Take care.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.